Our mid-morning panel is comprised of executives representing 5 diverse technology sectors, companies, which are now also leading cloud services providers in the healthcare arena. We've already met Chad, Joshua, and Jeff, so let's hear first from Russ and Christine about their organizations and how it relates to the adoption of cloud-based solutions in the healthcare and life sciences sector. Russ, you go ahead.
Sure. I'm with Prime Care Technologies, and I'm responsible for the software development businesses. Prime Care Technologies is a managed hosting provider focused on long-term care in the post-acute segment of healthcare. And in addition to essentially running the IT infrastructure and applications for long-term care entities, we develop and deliver cloud and SaaS-based software solutions, some narrowly focused on long-term care and others that are a little broader in focus. The three solutions that we offer in the software space are a procurement automation platform, which is consumed by both long-term care facilities when they order food over and over again and certain medical supplies. We also provide a dashboard for long-term care institutions that combines clinical information, financial information, and labor data. And then we have a claims clearinghouse. Most of the claims that we file go to Medicare and then significant to Medicaid and some to the private payer side. And I run software development, basically, about four different teams. So there you go.
Christine?
Hi, so I work for SAP. I'm in their industry value engineering segment. And I guess to answer this question, I would synthesize what I've been hearing over the last day and a half. And if I could put it together, I would say that there's sort of a trifecta approach to approaching the cloud question. And it's really, it's mobility, it's cloud, and it's analytics. And I guess, when I think about those things, they don't entirely work together unless you can do in-memory computing and real-time analytics on the data. So I think that that's where SAP is really forging ahead and creating opportunities, is that they have SAP HANA and HANA Enterprise Cloud, mm-hmm. which means that they can source data from lots of different sources and work on it in memory and get to actual causality in this sea of data that we now have, and then make predictions on it. So in healthcare, they're doing some really interesting stuff around diagnosis-related initiatives. For example, we have the Oncolyzer, which processes millions and millions of data elements and makes predictions and diagnosis for cancer patients. So they're doing some really interesting things in the space with real-time analytics.
So, first question for the panel. We're gonna highlight the state of the healthcare and life sciences industry adoption of cloud computing. What's working, what's not, what's next? So let's start with Chad and assess progress in how the cloud is currently being applied to key functions such as medical imaging, diagnostics, and patient records, et cetera. What function areas have come the furthest in adopting cloud-based solutions?
Well, it's a good question. So we, again, deploy enterprise-class data centers in Austin, Raleigh, North Carolina, and as such, we're out talking, focusing on healthcare, talking to a lot of people. We go to HIMSS, we go to American Telemedicine Association, and mix with a wide variety of organizations that are either already involved in healthcare data. I mean, they're a traditional company that's dealt with healthcare data for decades, and now is looking at the cloud as an opportunity. And there are startups that are looking at new ways of of delivering healthcare, like we just heard from my directives, the new technology to deploy it. And I would say that if you were to have to characterize the types of things that are being, the types of solutions that are most rapidly going to cloud computing, they would be kind of the two most dominant ones are in two areas. One is medical imaging. We're seeing a lot of development in that. The idea that you can acquire a picture of a patient in a different, you know, for the lack of a better term, in a different different formats, and we're seeing the modalities to collect those images rapidly changing very quickly. While the methods by which the doctors that are looking at those images and accessing those images and running data across those images or analytics across the data provided by those images is also undergoing rapid change, and these two, the fact that the images are so big and so hard to deal with, and the fact that the modalities for collecting them are changing so quickly, and it's very difficult for the modalities that the doctors are using to look at them are also rapidly changing, all combined with the fact that healthcare IT has traditionally been kind of a laggard in the adoption of new technologies, has really caused medical imaging specifically to really be rapidly moving towards the cloud. And then I would say the second area, which is somewhat related, is anything dealing with telemedicine. And that's the idea that you're acquiring medical data in one place and you're going to send it to someplace else. And there are just really fascinating things that are occurring in that area. People that are acquiring data with iPhones, with iWatches, with pictures on iPhones. We see people doing teledermatology. You can take a picture of that spot, the new spot in your hand, and send it to a bunch of dermatologists and see what's happening. I've talked to people that are doing surgery or neuro consults, talking to patients that have neurological problems, telepsychiatry of particular interest, the correctional industry or correctional institutes are very interested in telepsychiatry, being able to get psychiatry services to inmates at different places. So I would say that the big areas that we see a lot of development are imaging, and then anything to do with acquiring medical data in one place and then quickly accessing it in another place. The cloud is particularly well positioned to handle those types of services.
Joshua, do you want to add to that?
I would say we're definitely seeing more telediagnosis, you might call it. I don't know what you call it, but definitely see that. I think the places from a KCI standpoint that are going well are just the security on the cloud and being able the confidence in putting HIPAA data and different information out on the cloud and having that secure, but also accessible to authorized individuals. The spot that I think that we need the most growth in is standards, right? So I deal a lot with B2B and B2C type of communications, and the standards are an emerging player that will that can basically be that middleman to transform all communications into a communication from party A talking on one standard to a communication on party B talking to another standard is critical in the space. But I think that we're definitely getting there. I think the government and Medicare pushing EMRs is going to help us get there as far as insurance, dealing with insurance companies go. But definitely that's going to help us get from more paper-based communications to more electronic-based communications, which what Chad is talking about, as soon as we get better communications electronically, a lot of those things that he's mentioning become more readily available.
And the delay regarding electronically, primarily it's security, right? It's a question that I have, yeah.
What was the question? I'm sorry.
The delay in electronic data. For example, my mother currently is having some major back problems, and she's lost all her feeling on her left-hand side. and she's left-handed. So I've been going to all the specialists, filling out all the paperwork for her, you know, 8 to 10 pages, when I'm thinking, well, why can't her specialist automatically send all the information to each doctor that she's meeting with, you know, radiologists and, you know, neurosurgeons? And it just seems so simple, but again, security is the main reason why, correct?
From my perspective at KCI, which I deal with a slim part of the world compared to these guys, but I would say security has made advancements, and it's more about standards.
And being able
for your B2B business-to-business communications.
Okay.
Standards, and there's the data. Back to my story earlier about how you have to respect the characteristics of the data. There's a vested interest in not having interoperability in EMR systems. And there was just an article, I think it was either today or yesterday in the New York Times, a study that was released about Epic specifically being a very closed system and not as interoperable. If you have somebody's medical record, it's not in your best interest. Or if you're a provider selling an EMR system to a hospital, right, it's not in your best interest to have it easily, the data that's kept in it easily transferable out of it, because now you have to compete on a yearly basis with everybody else that sells systems that are interoperable with it.
I think we're going to have to force the combination of providers and healthcare IT providers to adopt standards that allow us to have a personal medical record that evolves that we can carry on a secure USB key. They're not going to do it unless there's a lot of force and pressure applied on them, explaining why it's important, why it's a better way, why we really want it. But you know, in the scenario you just described, each provider needs to get accurate information before they treat your mother.
Mm-hmm.
Different providers sometimes need different information. Different providers, you would think they would have all the same policies, but they don't. And on top of that, they don't have the same EMR and EHR systems either. They might not even have one. So that's the reality of today's situation.
And until there's integration.
Yeah. Now, I'm an optimist about EMR and EHR. I think the High Tech Act in 2009 started a foundational process for us gathering personal electronic medical records per visit, and the foundation for us to really have an individual patient's electronic health record over time. So we've laid the foundation, and there's been good adoption in EMR and EHR systems. On the other hand, I see more advanced solutions in healthcare IT. I was talking to a psychiatrist about a service he can get for genome sequencing of the liver that results in some insight about serotonin levels that can help him prescribe psychiatric drugs that impact serotonin levels. So such an expensive service that he can't really utilize it other than with certain really, really well-covered patients. So, you know, it's a mixed bag still in healthcare IT. There are some progress, and there's a long, long way to go from my standpoint, which, you know, just gives us a lot of work to do.
Sure. Jeff, do you want to add anything?
Get a lot. At the end of the day, though, what we're talking about is change, and change is hard.
Yeah.
Regardless of the industry, it's a hard thing for the human race to embrace change. We evolve over lots of years and lots of millennia, and healthcare is not an industry that is known to embrace change very quickly. Regardless of the logic behind it. So all the common sense in the world doesn't make it the most common of the senses. You know, in an emergency room, the medical system moves very quickly. It's in a defensive position, but it moves very quickly. The rest of healthcare moves slowly. And I think as we get more and more comfortable with technology, more and more comfortable with devices, as consumers move through the demographic cohorts to become in positions of leadership and power in organizations, we're driving that change, but it's not going to happen overnight.
Christine?
So
I think there's a lot of interesting things happening with the Internet of Things, and we've talked a lot about that over the last couple of days. But I think the thing to remember, and just to leverage what you were just saying, is that healthcare is reactive, and so much of the incentives are built into the regulatory mandate. So if you want to know what functional areas are going to be progressing the furthest and at which pace, then you should really follow the funds, right? So there's going to be a lot of companies that will want to get a piece of the pie, essentially, in EHR. There are going to be a lot of payment incentives and payment penalties around readmissions and ICD-10 implementation, sepsis, and healthcare-acquired infections. So if you want to know which areas are really going to progress the furthest, because healthcare is so reactive, we should be looking first to what the mandates are, because we know that that's how they're going to affect change.
Okay. Reactive. Okay. next. Let's review classes of entities in this sector and their respective status in cloud adoption, hospitals, physicians, groups, insurance companies, labs, pharmaceuticals, clinical trials, et cetera. Joshua?
So I talked about this a little bit in the presentation as far as just the vast customer base that KCI has to deal with and the different levels of technology based on those customers. So, you know, when you talk about patients, right, the nice thing about patients is, you know, that most of the time your patients do have better means as far as technology goes with mobile phones and so forth. And so that's where we've had a lot of adoption on RAOB through DocuSign. When we talk about facilities, and I think Chad was alluding to this as well, I mean, when you talk about insurance companies, right, it's not a matter of adoption from a technology standpoint. It's a matter of what they want to, what their business strategy is behind that, right? And so the easier an insurance company makes it for KCI to do business with them, then, you know, the more that they're gonna have to pay out as an insurance company, right? And so we deal with 15,000 different payers. We deal with a lot of different payer requirements. And most of that is gathered manually. You're not going to find, there's not a central database that most companies like KCI develop this in-house, but there's not a central database that really stores, you know, payer type of requirements. There are some different services out there that try to help you with that. But, you know, when we're trying to get payer requirements, we're going out to websites and having to scrub data. We're having to call insurance companies and be put on hold for long periods of time to get disconnected later, to call back in and get put on hold for long periods of time. And everybody, you know, whether you're a hospital, whether you're a post-acute facility, whether you're a DME, are dealing with those challenges. So I think the main driver there is it's not a focus on whether or not to embrace technology. Is just a focus on how easy are you going to be to do business with in some sectors, right?
Right. Yeah. Chad.
So I think that I'm sorry again. What was the question? Listening to what he was saying.
You know, the entities in the sector and their respective status in cloud adoption, and that included hospitals, physicians, groups, insurance companies, labs, pharmaceuticals.
Physicians groups. We don't typically in our business see physicians groups coming to us. They're typically getting acquired by larger groups or being addressed by facilitated by integrators or people like that. Well, people that are adopting our cloud solutions already have an IT department that understands virtualization, for instance. That's kind of the thing that really sorts people out. If they can understand virtualization and understand the idea that you can now separate the computing requirement, the thing that they used to do in their own computer that was in their own facility, and you can shift that out, then then they're more apt to develop or to adopt cloud computing. The people that are less apt to do it are, believe it or not, the large organizations. So we thought when we got into started focusing on hybrid computing that the United Healthcare's or the large hospitals would be really good clients for us, and it turns out that they're not. They're the people that are being, because of their traditional role in being protectors of that data, and because of these other characteristics of their other interests in controlling the data, they tend to be really tight-fisted with their data and are only being pushed by the providers that work for them to adopt cloud computing. And usually it's at the margin, so it's at it for a specific use. It's for a diagnostic use or to handle some type of remote customer or some type of specialized thing. One of the first healthcare customers that we had was a doctor that had a really good solution for taking care of his patients, EMR patient type solution, but he was dealing with prostate cancer, and he had to deal with an inventory of little radioactive seeds that would have to be placed in each of his patients, and that was tied to the healthcare information of those patients, and there was no really good solution for that. So he was dealing in a large facility that had their own EMR system, but he looked to the cloud for a solution to handle this opportunity really at the margin to take care of controlling these radioactive seeds, which themselves had a bunch of requirements. So I think the adoption of the cloud really is driven by, as you said, requirements for meaningful use and things like that and requirements, but also by the characteristics of the data and the characteristics of the way it's collected and used.
Okay, Russ.
Yeah, so I did a little research on this one. It seems like the folks that are involved in clinical trials are oftentimes fairly sophisticated IT users, and sometimes, in some cases, they're not only scientists, but they're developers. So some pretty impressive case studies on Amazon's site about clinical trials that have been conducted by people like Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer and Medidata. And so the clinical trials people definitely have huge data sets. They move them up into the cloud. They get access to compute resources rapidly. They do computational analysis quickly and easily in public cloud. And hopefully they de-identify all that information too. That's a pretty good scenario for one of the constituencies in the system where they really have exploited cloud pretty rapidly. We have a new customer in our procurement automation business that's a pretty interesting case. It'll be a compounding content and security and quality control system. Some of you may recall that there was some severe problems with bad compounding that occurred in Massachusetts. And as a result of the investigation of what happened there, it became pretty clear that a chain of custody and rigorous quality control is needed in the compounding part of the industry. Especially, I know that you guys are in the wound care space, Joshua, and it's probably very interesting to you. So this company is building a new chain of custody content control system for compounds to meet, new, much more rigorous standards that are going to be demanded around compounding. And we're going to provide the procurement automation portion of that solution through an API integration with this new platform. So to me, that's another good case, good step forward, not unlike your business, Jeff, where people are thinking creatively and they're aggressively going after. It's really, there are so many areas for us to attack, but you gotta knock them off one at a time, do the hard work, one good solution at a time. And so there are different constituents in this industry that are pushing this thing. We just need to keep rallying,
Right. And that touches on the next question, but I'm going to give Jeff and Christine a few minutes here.
Okay. I agree with what they were saying.
Okay.
Interested to learn.
I would just add that if you're wondering which entities are going to adopt cloud the fastest or most effectively, you just have to go back to basic business models, right? So insurance payers have been in the predictive analytics game for a lot longer than hospitals, right? Their entire model is built around being able to predict out what kind of diseases are going to, you know, what their costs are going to be and what diseases are going to come their way and they're going to have to pay for. So I think that insurance companies are probably the most ready, but they have an invested interest in not sharing their data. Right? And that goes back to your question about what is taking so long with EHR. There's an inherent conflict of interest between providers and payers. Right. Payers have, you know, their source of competitive advantage is all of that data. I think when it comes to clinical trials, what Russ was saying, I think they're also managing lots and lots of data in genomics, and they sort of understand the long game. And what I mean is that they understand long-term ROI, they understand total cost of ownership better than the providers do. And so in that way that they're ready, but they also don't really have as much incentive to share what they're understanding. Right. So to move to the cloud may not be the right move for them. I think providers, they see the value, but they're not ready. Right. And so that's the slowness.
We only have 5 minutes left here, so I'm going to ask that I want each one of you to be able to address this, but if you can do it in
quick,
a minute or less, and I won't time you. In addition to your own company, and you're free to include it, what other vendors and suppliers are serving this space well? Go ahead, Jeff.
Our field is so new that we've seen other startups enter and leave the space. Just didn't quite get the scale. They didn't quite get and grasp the complexity of the situation and the variety of areas that needed to be touched. To Christine's point about the health payers, clearly they have a very important role to play. In our particular case, the payer is incredibly important because the payer reaches people before they become a patient. Their covered lives, by definition, are people. Some of them might already be patients, but the doctor is already talking to a patient. So in our case, it's a little bit too late to ask a patient to create a directive. And we need to get people over the age of 18 before they become a patient, regardless of their health condition, regardless of their age. And to normalize that process for us, strategic partners like the payers are critical.
Okay. Russ.
Yeah, so I think earlier I said the foundation in EHR and EMR is good, and I single out a couple of SaaS vendors in that space. Athena Health has done a nice job. And then in long-term care and post-acute, I would talk about Point Click Care, a Canadian company. Two specific examples of companies that have done well. And then a startup in New York City, very well funded, called ZocDoc, that lets you find physicians, find out whether you're covered, see the schedule, get yourself on the schedule at that physician, locate them on a Google map. Really good from a consumer standpoint. So there's three that I kind of wanted to
call
out.
Thank you.
Sure.
Christine? Okay. Well, I promised them each a minute out of being gracious. I'm told to stop. Okay.
Should we go? Are we done?
We're done.
Oh, finished.
We got questions.
The boss is sitting in front of me, so okay.
Do we have time for questions from?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Are really secure in the sense that, you know, HIPAA compliant. In the sense that, you know, we at KCI, we develop apps. But the customers, they want to know the data is secure, right? So we don't see something like this in the like you know, I'm looking something in the analogous to VeriSign, which helps to ensure trust. Something of that sort has not emerged in the healthcare space, like in a HIPAA compliance. We say, like from a technology side, we say we are the data is encrypted. We use all the secure, like in SSL and all those things. But there, we haven't seen that middleware emerge from a HIPAA compliance space. So I just wanted to know your...
Well, in the payment card industry, you have, I'll try to be quick, you have the payment PCI DSS, and you have certifications of people, and the healthcare industry is developing that. So there's you know, HIPAA compliance is very similar to PCI compliance. And it, like, for instance, our level, the data center level, there's certifications like SSA 16, SOC 1, SOC 2 certifications. So we can bring certifications by third-party verification verifiers and auditors to different aspects of that. And I think a good framework that's developing is called the High Trust Computer, CSF, or security framework. So if you look up High Trust CSF, it's a framework that the industry is adopting to provide that extra level of assurance that those other certifications, SSA 16 and related certifications, don't reach, take it the next step.
So I have a quick but maybe slightly different take on it. I think there are multiple entities that have to prove they're taking care of protected health information, and I think that each entity can leverage new technology to do a better job of that. I think one of the presentations that I saw this morning talked about the power of metadata and recorded information, and I believe that metadata and recorded information will be used in HIPAA compliance assessments in the near future, and I think companies that are going to come up with those solutions are going to do well. So I think HIPAA compliance assessment is an opportunity area for us to apply new technology and just eliminate the questions about is an entity truly HIPAA compliant or not. Now that also assumes that what HIPAA compliance is at this moment is going to stay static, and it might not. Yeah, so it could be a moving target. So
for us, very briefly, because I know we're under time pressure, I'll be happy to talk more offline. At the end of the day, it's about trust. It's about confidence. It's about being authentic and being transparent and being very upfront to manage expectations. We're in a business of taking the consumer's voice and delivering that voice at the time of need. And if we don't have that trust with the consumer, we failed as a business. So it's incredibly core to what we do. And we don't believe we can be perfect for everybody, but we have a very high benchmark. And we strive every day to exceed the expectation on that issue. So I can talk more about the specifics of what we do offline, because I know Marty's desperate to keep going.
Yeah, we could do a whole day on this. There's no at least that much. But thank you. We had so much talent up here. It's, you know, we could go on. Thank you, everybody, very much for your participation. Great job.